You are listening to Studying Pixels, a podcast on game studies and video game culture. I'm Stefan Heinrich Simond. I'm a game studies scholar from Germany.
I'm Dan Hughes, a Japanese scholar from Texas.
And you can find us every Sunday on studyingpixels.com and wherever you get your podcasts. The Game Awards 2022 are over. That basically is the end, the beginning of the end of the year, you could say.
That's right. We've got everything wrapped up and now we're looking to the future.
What are your overall thoughts on the Game Awards before we dive into the specifics on the entire showcase as such?
I really like watching the Game Awards evolve because you can tell how much effort Jeff Keighley and his team put into changing things and making things better every year. I think that this was, it still felt a little bloated at times, but I think that the really cool thing for me was that it felt like they had the formula down a little bit better and everything kind of felt like it was falling into place and it was really fun.
They got such a great routine going, I feel. Like, they're just grooving along. I remember still the early days of the Game Awards when they were struggling a bit and they're trying to find their pace. And I think now they pretty much got it down and they keep grooving and deliver, I would say, a very consistently enjoyable showcase.
It was really fun, and I think it was nice that everybody was there in person. I think Jeff Keighley called it out at the beginning, saying how nice it is that everybody was in the audience and that people felt safe and that, you know, obviously COVID-19 is still a situation that we have to watch out for, but it's certainly a different world than it was last year even. And seeing everybody there and having a full audience was really cool.
Well, we're going to share our perspectives on the high and the low lights of the Game Awards 2022 in this episode. We're also going to talk about the awards and announcements. But first, I want to remind you out there that, of course, if you want to support this show, then you can do that by getting Studying Pixels Plus. And this month, we've got a new Plus episode, just like every month, I just realized.
That's true. This month is no different. Yeah.
This month is no different, but it's this week that a new episode came out. It is called Worst Mistakes to Make as a Student, because as you know, some of these Plus episodes, they are deep dives into video game culture, and others, such as this one, are episodes that are meant to help you study, to help you navigate university life. It's a pretty broadly conceptualized episode where we talk about all kinds of mistakes that we have either made ourselves or that we have witnessed other people make, and that we wanted to put together so that you don't have to make the exact same mistakes. Now, we also have a small housekeeping item in that there is another way to financially support us if you wish. We set up a PayPal Me account. So that is paypal.me/studyingpixels. paypal.me/studyingpixels. If you go there, and there's also a link on our website directly at the top, then you can send us money as a one-time donation, because I do know that not everyone wants to engage in a Patreon subscription. I understand that. Yet, if you still want to help out, then that is a great way to do so. Though I do want to be fair in saying that a PayPal donation is much appreciated and you earn our eternal gratitude, but we can't provide you with the Patreon benefits, because the Patreon benefits, they run through Patreon directly. So this is just if you say, okay, I've got a couple of bucks left, I want to send this over to support Studying Pixels, which is obviously much appreciated.
Yes, it definitely, it's a cool thing for us to basically run the show with your help. So if that's something that you would like to do, but you, as Stefan said, don't want to commit to the Patreon, that option is available and it is absolutely appreciated.
If you want to do that, then head over to paypal.me/studyingpixels.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
And here we are, talking about the annual Game Awards 2022. This is, for all of the uninitiated, really the Oscars for video games. It took a while until it reached that kind of status, but it has obtained it now, as in a major, approximately 3-hour showcase with lots of awards. But in case you haven't seen it before, it's not just about awards. It's actually, I would say, 30 to 40% awards, and the rest is like, trailers and previews and performances, stuff like that. It's a whole show.
Which does fit into the ethos of gaming, I think, too, because a lot of, it's obviously an industry award show where people get recognized for their work, doing hard work on video games in all different facets. But it's also, there's a lot of really cool community engagement. A lot of the awards are voted on by the community. And part of the community, obviously, is speculation, leaks, and spoilers. And so to see all of these announcements at the Game Awards, it kind of fits with everything that we love about video games.
Maybe that's really a crucial observation, that in comparison to the music industry and the film industry, the video game industry and video game culture as such has really such a forward trajectory, probably also because of it being so strongly based on technological innovation, on that, wow, the new consoles, and wow, the new hardware, everything that's possible, and so on. There's a lot of desire and appeal to look forward and to like strive towards the future.
And what I'll say about Jeff Keighley being the perfect host for this show is that he is so, you can tell how enthused he is and how excited he is. I'm sure you noticed, Stefan, that there were moments where he was introducing maybe like a From Software situation, or he was talking about the new game Judas by Ken Levine and his team, where you can see him visibly excited that he was able to play it, and he knows about it, and he's about to share it. I think it's just the perfect melding of what people who love video games want to see from a production like this, and he's really hit the sweet spot.
Yeah, totally. He's not biased in a sense that he gives all of the game announcements their fair share of attention. Like he says, like another world premiere, he presents it well, but you can clearly tell when it's something that he's excited for, and it's like, I'm so happy. Oh my God.
Basically, he's vibrating. He's so excited.
Yeah, this is beautiful. You can sense this kind of childish excitement within him. That I think is what drives also many audience members to go to the Game Awards or to sit in front of the TV. And as soon as the first pictures come up, they're like, oh, what could it be? What could it be? It's Armored Core. Wow. You know, like that kind of excitement. He really conveys that very well.
Yeah, he's the perfect host. And I know that he's a big driver behind this show as a whole. And I think that we mentioned this last year, that Jeff Keighley is just endlessly charismatic in his own way. And I think that carries over into this show. And he's always a big highlight for me.
Yeah, he's the ambassador of video games at this point.
Well-earned title, I think.
He even handled one exceptional situation well that you've alluded to at the very beginning already, that there's something that happened under his nose and probably disgruntled him a bit. So there was one incident at the Game Awards 2022 that stood out. Everything is quite planned in this showcase. And that's why it's so specifically that it stands out. A bloke basically seized the microphone, even though he shouldn't have. This was towards the very end of the show when the Game of the Year award was given out to From Software, and Miyazaki and his team came on the stage to do an acceptance speech, and one fellow person just went with them, even though he did not belong at all. Actually, it turns out this guy is 15 years old, and he's called Maiten Even. I found his name online. He lingered around the back of the stage while Miyazaki was doing his acceptance speech. And as the speech was over, he rushed to the microphone as the goodbye music was already playing. And he said the following words, and I'm going to read it out just like he said it. He said, I want to thank everybody and say I think I want to nominate this award to my Reformed Orthodox Rabbi Bill Clinton.
You hear that and immediately you think, what? What do you, what? When, so full disclosure, I watched this live with friend of the show, Richard Mertens. And when we were watching it, we both had this moment where we started talking about other things and we couldn't believe what we were hearing. We were like, did that just happen? What is this? And it wasn't so obtrusive that it was like the slap at the Oscars, right? It was just this weird thing that happened at the end. And your brain starts turning and you think, what did he say? Reformed Orthodox Rabbi Bill Clinton. Is this some sort of weird dog whistle that this kid is up there saying? What's going on? It was very strange.
I had the exact same experience. Since I watched it in hindsight, I was aware already that this would happen. And so I looked out for the kid and I saw him lingering around there. And I still couldn't quite puzzle together what he was trying to say. I think he really fumbled it
for all intents and purposes.
Because the thing is, whatever he was trying to say, it didn't come across. I have no idea. I thought maybe someone else knows, but apparently the internet is a bit puzzled about what exactly he's trying to say. Is he sincere about something? Is he a fan of Bill Clinton? Is he trying to be anti-Semitic? You know? And if he is, he could have said 1,000 other things to be more clearly anti-Semitic. I just don't understand why he would just ramble such inconsistencies into the microphone at the end.
I think you're right. I think he fumbled it pretty hard. Whatever he was trying to do, it didn't work. And Jason Schreier got an interview with him. He called him up and got permission from his parents to talk to him about this whole incident. And it turns out, so Jeff Keighley had tweeted afterwards that he was arrested. I don't think that's true. I think Jeff Keighley believed it, but he was just ushered to the police station for questioning. He wasn't arrested, actually. But Jason Schreier spoke to him afterwards, and Schreier's sort of view of him is that here's this kid who he's not giving up the character that he's playing, but he has no agenda. He's just this weird kid who tried to do something and then it just messed it up entirely. But he's got an interesting history, this guy. I don't know how much you read into that, Stefan, but this isn't his first foray into interrupting things.
Yeah, let's say for a 15-year-old, he has made some weird appearances on, InfoWars, which is like an alt-right news channel. I shouldn't say news, an alt-right lying channel.
Propaganda channel, yeah.
Propaganda channel, yeah. Mouthpiece channel. And I also saw that he went to BlitzCon in 2019, where he interrupted the show and he exclaimed, "Free Hong Kong," which I get. I know there were lots of protests revolving around this this event, and I do know that Activision Blizzard had made the deliberate decision to ban any such political statements. So it kind of made sense. And it's not entirely unsurprising. It's like, okay, you know, let him shout his message and then, you know, he can be ushered aside by the security and the things can move on. I just don't understand why at the Game Awards and why such an inconceivable message.
I think I'm cautious to say it's not worth the scrutiny because there are some frightening anti-Semitic sentiments happening in America right now with Kanye West and Nick Fuentes and all these people who are not worth mentioning. Beyond that, but so I don't want to completely write it off and say that this was without any kind of ill intent. But as you said, he made a total ass of himself up there.
Totally.
So I don't know. I think the message kind of gets lost in that because he is a 15-year-old boy. So it's worth a little scrutiny, but I wouldn't say we've witnessed something horrific here.
Yeah, the content warrants little scrutiny, but the incident itself kind of frustrates me, I must say, because we've often got the situation in the world that things are going well and smoothly, and then some kind of idiot does something totally disruptive, and then the security is tightened. And then the Game Awards look very specifically, who are we going to let into the show next year, and we're going to maybe have a kind of like a thing that separates the audience from the show, or maybe we have to hire extra security that are standing by at all times, because we don't know. Maybe other people inspired by this fella, maybe people who are more directly outspoken in a racist manner or whatever, might try to seize the stage. Maybe we need to start, and this is just brainstorming, but maybe we need to also be aware that this person managed to get really up close and personal with someone as prominent as Miyazaki. Who else would he potentially be able to get close to? And what if it wasn't him, but what if it was someone who had a really like dangerous intent, someone who actually wanted to harm someone? It goes down this rabbit hole that I really find very troublesome, and I would rather like that it would not go down that rabbit hole, and that's why I would prefer if people could just behave a little bit, you know?
I totally agree, and you're right. It's like with anything, things, as you say, they get tightened, things change, so next year's Game Awards will look different from this year's because of this incident. And I will say that luckily it wasn't anything dangerous. And this, you know, this was a kid who got up there. And I will say that I was thinking about it afterwards and yesterday as I was kind of digesting everything. And I was like, why didn't they get him off? Like, clearly you recognize that he's not part of the From Software team. He's a 15-year-old boy. Why wouldn't they get him off? But then I thought, if I were in that position and I didn't really know what was going on, if I were Jeff Keighley and I was seeing that and I didn't really know what's going on, I'm thinking, I don't want to interrupt the Game of the Year speech from Miyazaki. And like, this seems like just something strange. I don't quite understand what's happening. I guess the option was get security on stage during that moment and usher him off and then have that moment totally robbed from Miyazaki and From Software, because that's then everybody would be saying, what happened there? Who was that? Why was, you know, it's a tough position to be in the moment. So I appreciate that difficulty for them, and see tighter restrictions coming our way next year.
Yeah, that's true. If you interfere too early, then the audience is going to wonder, why is security seizing the guy from Software during the acceptance speech? Yeah.
Why are they taking this little boy away?
Though the thing is that realistically, I guess, when we talk about potential measures to tighten security, I could imagine that then the idea is just you have to register in advance who is going to speak up on the stage. Because I assume that since nobody interfered earlier, I assume that they have this kind of rule where it's just, you know, the people that feel compelled to go on stage, the studios haggle out internally who's going to speak and who's going to speak on their behalf. And then people would just assume, yeah, maybe it's someone's kid and they want to basically just, you know, people do these things and be like, and I love my family, something like that. And here's my son.
Something that I find endearing about the Game Awards is the flip side of this coin, which is that there is some sort of improvisational, I don't know what we're doing feeling to it. Because there is a moment where Doug Bowser accepted the award for Bayonetta 3, and he didn't know where to go after the award. And then the best thing in the world was somebody thawed out Al Pacino and didn't tell him, like, hey, you can leave the stage when Christopher Judge is having his speech. Because they kept cutting to poor Al Pacino just waiting in the wings like a vampire in the background.
Al Pacino, he was the first speaker to come on stage. And it was kind of charming. Al Pacino is very, very old, and he doesn't really have a close attachment to video games, but he's kind of cool, and he's kind of famous, and he didn't bring his glasses, and he couldn't see the teleprompter, and he was just kind of stumbling through his speech. All the while, I thought, it's really charming, it's going on for too long, but it's really charming.
I like that he called out, I can't really read the teleprompter, because if he had tried to stumble through it without kind of calling himself out, that would have been really hard to watch.
Oh, but what a nightmare that must be. Imagine you're a speaker at the Game Awards, where you know that it's not just a huge audience in front of you, but also all over the world people are watching this, and everything that you do and say will be documented for the rest of eternity. And then you come on stage and you're like ready to get going, and you realize, like, oh, what is that on the teleprompter? I can't read it. Where are my glasses? You know?
Yeah, in fairness, if it had been anybody else, I think the embarrassment factor would have gone up like crazy. But if you're Al Pacino and you're 150 years old and you've been in every fantastic movie in the past 50 years, you're gonna it's like water off a duck's back. Yeah, I'm Al Pacino. What are you gonna do about it?
Yeah, it's like he leaves the venue and he's just like, don't care.
Yeah, another day.
Well, maybe we should jump into our highlights and lowlights. In order to dig through the just things that really stood out to us about the Game Awards. Do you want to get started with your first highlight?
Yeah, it's a really good segue from the Al Pacino stuff, because after Al Pacino was there to introduce the best performance, and there was a lot of good contenders, But Christopher Judge won for his performance as Kratos in God of War Ragnarok. And I was really excited for that because I think that is one of the... His take on Kratos in particular, it was great in God of War 2018, but I think in Ragnarok, it really comes through how much work and time he put into this character, how much understanding he has of Kratos as a person, where he is on his journey, what his relationship with Atreus is. And I thought that it was a really touching speech that definitely went on too long.
Yeah.
And my favorite moment, this is, I love that he won. I'm very happy for him because I think it's well-deserved. But my favorite thing is, I don't know if you caught this, Stone, but Jeff Keighley, when it came back, there was a bit of a break where they showed some trailers. And when it came back, Jeff Keighley was standing over Christopher Judge, and you can tell he was having some harsh words with him.
Yeah, you could also tell while Christopher Judge was speaking, and what he was saying was really heartfelt, really sincere, but he went on and on. I just thought, is this going to be the Game Awards? Is this going to be, you know, just one award, and Christopher Judge is just speaking for 90 minutes or something?
Well, it was so, and it was such a, it was a good speech that it was very drawn out, but it was very heartfelt, and he was telling really cool stories about working with Corey Barlog and working with Eric Williams, the director of Ragnarok, and things like this. But I remember thinking at the time, this seems like the end of the award speech, you know, the end of the game show speech, where why is this? There's so much gravitas for this. Like at the beginning of an award show, it should be like, hey, I got the best music. Thank you very much. Goodbye.
Yeah. I also thought, as he was speaking, I thought if it continues in that pace, then this is going to be a long evening.
Show. Yeah.
And they kind of on the fly implemented this kind of playing people out, you know, just like fading in some music and then gradually increasing the volume. They do this at the Oscars as well, but I don't think they were prepared to implement it here. And they were kind of hesitant and they waited and waited. And then it was like, guys, we have to do something.
The best thing about it was that you could tell that he took it not as I need to get off the stage, but as backing to his yeah. incredible speech, because he leaned into it and was like, and furthermore.
This gives my speech additional gravitas.
Yeah. So I consider that it was to me, that's like, it felt very Game Awards to me, because it was a well-deserved award coupled with something that they weren't prepared for.
And you could also tell that from then onwards with the following awards, that they were much more rigorous. They actually, after a minute, they started putting in that music and basically cutting people off already, except for with Miyazaki at the end. They were like a little bit more lenient.
Give them some time, yeah.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I just thought that was, what a way to kick it off. And I don't want to take away from this, well-deserved from Christopher Judge, because that performance is fantastic.
Absolutely amazing. And actually, I want to share my first low light, because it is directly connected to God of War. God of War Ragnarok won, I think, the most awards of the show. We already mentioned that Elden Ring won Game of the Year, very deservedly so. We already assumed that that would be the case. But God of War Ragnarok literally got like what felt to me like 80% of the other awards. That game, such high praise. However, not everyone wanted that to happen. There was, just before the Game Awards started, actually a concerted effort to bomb the review scores of God of War Ragnarok on Metacritic. There was a concerted action of review bombing, where people come in and they deliberately give a game like an especially negative rating, like a 0 out of 10, to overall like tip the scales and to make it slide down in the ratings so that it is perceived more negatively. I don't know why people would actually assume that that makes a difference for the Game Awards, because by that time everything had already been decided, so it's like, it's a very dumb thing to do. But they actually accomplished quite something. The PS5 version of Ragnarok went down to a 7.9 on Metacritic, and the PS4 version down to a 6.1. And just out of curiosity, I couldn't help myself. I was just like, okay, so people apparently rate God of War Ragnarok on PS4 a 6.1. Let's see what other games have a 6.1? Let's see what kind of games Ragnarok is apparently on par with. And these games, the following games all have a 6.1. Jurassic World Evolution 2. Mm-hmm. Balan Wonderland.
Uh-oh.
Shenmue 3. Need for Speed Heat. Sonic Forces. For Honor. The Soda Drinker Pro.
Oh, the classic.
Watch Dogs. Lightning Returns, Final Fantasy 13, and NHL 14. These are basically the games that God of War Ragnarok is now in the same league with.
What a ridiculous community we have where what's the point, you know, just to say, well, the game that I wanted to win, or even I just don't think this game should be getting enough praise. I'm going to bring the Metacritic score down so that people wonder why it won all these awards. I don't know. It seems petty and silly to me.
It seems petty. And to me, I just thought, this is why we can't have nice things, you know? Because, of course, you know, Elden Ring deserved every single award that it got. It's a fantastic video game. And it would have gotten that award anyway. That review bombing did make absolutely zero difference for the game awards. And I also think, you know, Metacritic is such an important tool for people to find games that they like, games that they might be interested in. Why not give your actual rating? Why not think about this game, play the game, and not be like, oh, I read through lots of these comments then because I was on the website anyway and I was a bit curious. And people are saying ridiculous things about it, like, oh, it's recycled, should have been a DLC, story's trash, there are invisible walls everywhere. Like, things where you can say, okay, this is not even constructive criticism. This is not even unconstructive criticism. This is just blatantly made up.
Yeah.
it's ridiculous.
If we're in the position where people are like, oh, I hate the idea that Elden Ring is going to win over God of War Ragnarok, this was a fantastic year for video games. If we're down to those two, and it's a coin flip with what we think is going to win. I think, I didn't put this as a highlight, but something I just want to comment on. I thought that the awards were very well balanced in the sense that I was, up until the Game Awards, wondering a little bit, like, maybe Elden Ring will get knocked out by God of War Ragnarok, because it's a really fantastic game, fantastic story. It's I think we mentioned in our review of it, it's kind of the pinnacle of AAA games right now. And I think that the balance of Elden Ring won Game of the Year because of how innovative and impressive and incredible it was, and God of War Ragnarok won a slew of other awards for its technical prowess, its storytelling, its performances. Perfect balance, because that's, I think, very correct in a way that award shows aren't always correct in retrospect.
Well, if there's one developer studio that probably felt a little bit bitter about this, then it should be Guerrilla Games, because you can tell what kind of an exceptional year for video games it was by the fact that Horizon Forbidden West, which is for all intents and purposes a really great game, did not win a single award, I think. I just went through the awards list and it didn't win in any category, which is not because the game's bad. It is because there are just some other games that were so exceptionally good that came out this year that it couldn't compete.
It's the Horizon curse. They're two for two now, right? Because Zero Dawn came out right before Breath of the Wild, and Forbidden West came out right before Elden Ring. Both, they're fantastic games, incredible stories. Just bad luck with the timing, I think.
Yeah, and they'll be perfectly fine. I don't actually think that they're bitter at all. I think they take great pride in being nominated in those categories and being aware that if it wouldn't have been for Elden Ring and God of War, they would probably have easily won quite some awards, and they'll be perfectly fine. They're doing well. They're working on a wonderful DLC.
Looks great.
Burning Sands, or what it was called? Burning Shores.
Burning Shores.
Looks really wonderful. They got their VR game in the making, so they're going to be perfectly fine.
Yeah, and, you know, Aloy is as much a face of Sony or PlayStation as Kratos is. So it's a cool place to be. I think we're all very lucky. It was a really good year for video games.
It was indeed, yeah. Do you want to share your next one?
Yes. So speaking of sort of touching things, I wanted to, I don't really have a big segue here, but I, am a huge fan of Batman. I'm not a big comic book guy, but I love Batman and Superman. And unfortunately, the voice of Batman, Kevin Conroy, passed away at the much too young age of 66 recently. If you've ever played the Arkham games, he voiced Batman in those. He voiced him in the animated series. He really is, I think, the person who made that character what he is, and just really upsetting passing of a really talented person. And there was an incredible reveal. I think the best reveal of the show, personally, to me, that his recordings were finished before he passed away for Suicide Squad Kill the Justice League. And I was not interested in this game until it was revealed that this was Kevin Conroy's final performance.
Oh, really?
I'm so excited for it. And I did some digging into it. It's in the hands of Rocksteady. It's in the world of Arkham Knight, or the Arkham games. So it's sometime after Arkham Knight. So that makes me really happy because that team is incredible at storytelling and their video games are obviously really great. And I thought that the nod to Kevin Conroy for this trailer for the Suicide Squad game was something I was not expecting at the Game Awards and something that I felt was very thoughtful. And Jeff Keighley's words afterwards were also very heartfelt and emotional. And I think really nice send-off to somebody who had a fantastic influence on voice acting in video games and voice acting overall.
It is really important that the Game Awards take a moment to make such a statement, such a commemoration, because they really put up like a well put together trailer, and it was circling all around Kevin Conroy. I think, I read some reviews about the Game Awards, and some people said that it didn't have a kind of impactful statement, such as last year's statement that Geoff Keighley made against the conditions at Activision Blizzard. It was kind of lacking that. True, of course, but on the other hand, it did have such moments of commemoration where it clearly marks its stake as being not just a showcase of here are a bunch of new video games and here are a bunch of awards, but also like an amalgamation of the status quo of video game culture, including the grief that it might be present.
Totally well said. And yeah, I just thought that it was not something I was expecting, and I really loved how they handled it.
Talking about things that we were not expecting, or I was not expecting at least. I expected Hideo Kojima to come out on stage.
Yeah,
it's kind of mandatory. He has to be there at every Game Awards. But what I did not expect was the announcement of Death Stranding 2.
Yeah.
I must say, I haven't played the first game. I am aware of its existence, and I've heard lots of it. And I was kind of flashed by the trailer for the second one. I found it very impressive. It was very stylish. It was very impactful. And it clearly showed a profound commitment to this entire narrative framework of Death Stranding. It actually fascinated me so much that I thought, I should really play the first Death Stranding before the second one comes out.
I'm very excited to dive into it because I haven't played all that much of it. And I agree, that trailer, Kojima knows his cinema, and that was so captivating and so interesting. And I'm really happy that it's getting a sequel, because you can tell that that's where Kojima's passion has been for years now. So anytime Kojima is passionate about something and he gets to make it, sign me up. I'm on board.
And you know what? Kojima-san, he's so charming. I knew that before, but really at the Game Awards, it was so palpable because he said on stage that he rewrote the entire script for Death Stranding 2 because he didn't want to predict the future again with the COVID pandemic.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because obviously the isolation and, losing contact with each other, totally a theme of the first Death Stranding game. And I think the pandemic kind of had such a profound impact that he actually decided to rewrite the game.
That's so cool. And I think we're not breaking new ground by saying that he's a brilliant artist, but I love the idea that he was maybe working on Death Stranding 2, where he had a pitch for it, and then the pandemic hit, and he thought, I'm going to tell this story now. That's very, very endearing to me, and I'm glad that he's able to make that game.
You know, I find it kind of amazing that he seems to be so, like, kind, and he's able to, you know, take a joke and laugh about things, laugh about his own work and so on, because there's so many obnoxious, arrogant artists in this world that a person like Kojima, who is so celebrated as basically the icon of the video game industry, the, you know, basically advanced
the auteur. Think
of the auteur of video games, that he seems to be such a grounded guy who like chuckles and makes some jokes about his work. I find that really cool.
One of the things that I want to shout out, so I'm a big Kojima fan, just as a person. I like his work too, obviously, but as a person, he strikes me as somebody who loves art and is excited to engage with it. And I follow him on Twitter, and I remember, the Mike Flanagan television show, Midnight Mass, Kojima was a huge fan of this when it came out, and it's a fantastic show. If you haven't seen it, you should. But there's an actor, Rahul Kohli, who's in it, and Kojima tweeted how much he enjoyed his performance. And I was so happy to see that they met at the Game Awards, because Rahul Kohli introduced something, and there's this lovely picture of them, and you can just see how jazzed Kojima is to be like, look at him, he was in the show that I loved.
It's kind of cool, and you realize that no matter how big you make it in a certain field, there's still always people that you look up to, always people that you admire, and I think that's important to stay grounded.
Mm.
Well, let's take a short break before we continue with our further impressions from the Game Awards 2022.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
And we are back with more high and lowlights from the Game Awards 2022, actually.
2020.
Welcome to Cyberpunk 2077.
You've been asleep for 20,000 years. Yes.
This podcast has restarted now after 200 years.
Excellent. Cyberpunk 2020. Well, I wanted to, speaking of Kojima and his lovely appearance, I wanted to bring up one of my lowlights, which I call it a lowlight. It's more of a funny observation that I made, which was Miyazaki had a translator, and that poor translator was nervous out of his mind.
Oh, yeah.
It was, you know, we're in the privileged position of, you know, knowing Japanese, and I was listening to Miyazaki because it's rare that you hear him speak in public. He's a very guarded, kind of quiet person, and I think he usually has his nose to the grindstone working on whatever game he's working on. So it's really interesting to see him speak. And I was listening to him, and yeah, that poor translator, he was missing things. He was leaving things out. You could tell that Miyazaki would say something really lengthy, and you could see on the translator's face, like, paraphrase this.
You know what's even funnier? When he stepped on the stage for the first time, to accept, I think it was like best RPG or something.
Best role-playing game, yeah.
Best role-playing game, yes. Then they went off stage. And then when it came to winning game of the year, and he just had this, you could see the sinking feeling. He's like, oh God, I got to get up there again.
I got to translate. And he was like all sweaty. And this poor guy, like, I feel so, he did a good job.
He did a swell job.
Yeah. It was funny to, you know, little nuances here and there were left out. Like one of my favorites was at the beginning of his Miyazaki's speech for accepting the Game of the Year award. He said, "Oh, bikuri shimashita," which means, "Oh, this is a shock. I'm surprised." Right? It's a very humbling thing to say, or humble thing to say. And the translator just kind of left that by the wayside, and just they went into the big speech that he had. So little things here and there were missed. But I will say this: I don't envy that guy's position, because it's a lot of work to do on the fly.
And actually, when Miyazaki said "bikuri shimashita," my first thought was like, "Yeah, you're the only one, though." Yeah. Like, everyone knew it's going to be Elden Ring.
Yeah.
But I think it's also, as you said, I think it's a gesture of humility. It's a gesture of saying, like, "I did not possibly expect that." Even though, of course, they were prepared. He had a speech prepared and everything. But yes, it speaks to the character of Miyazaki, I think.
Yes, and I think that one of the things that the translator did convey correctly and impactfully was that Miyazaki ended his speech by saying that he has so many more ideas and they have so many more games that they want to make, and he's just so thankful for the opportunity that people enjoy them. And that's a very cool thing to hear from that guy, because he's given so many people, ourselves included, untold hours of joy from those cool games that he makes.
Also, of course, a round of imaginary applause for this translator, because we don't want to paint a negative picture of the job that he did. He did a good job. I think he was just very nervous, which is totally understandable, because it's a big event, it's a big night, and every single word matters. And he was trying his very best, and he did a really good job.
There was a cute moment too, where you could see Miyazaki was holding the award and he was looking at it, and then he heard that the translator was going on for a little while, and he just looked at him and kind of gave him like a "Kanbatte," like, "You can do it."
It's like, take a breath, yep. My friend. You can do
it. It's all good.
Was it otsutsuite ne? It's like, you know, please calm down.
Yeah. All right. You're good.
Well, I've also got a Japanese one then. Here's a highlight of mine. Blue Protocol by Bandai Namco is going to be released in 2023. Blue Protocol was actually one of these few games. You know, every Game Awards, you watch tons and tons of trailers, and most of them just blur into one, and you're just like, okay, so there was an announcement of approximately 400 different video games, but a few of them stick out, and Blue Protocol was definitely one of them. An MMORPG that is strikingly beautiful. It has this cel-shading look, it seems cutesy, it seems fun. Actually, the reason why I found this so appealing is, yes, of course, I might be interested in playing it. And there is also a beta that's already running in Japan at the moment. And the impressions seem to be quite positive overall. Like, I looked a little bit through the Japanese side of the internet, and what I could gather from it was that the impressions are generally favorable. But most importantly, it might be a formidable competition for Genshin Impact.
Yeah, it definitely, I think even just aesthetically, it seems like it's going for it, because, and Bandai Namco is the perfect company to do it, because when I saw it before I knew that it was its own thing, Blue Protocol, I was thinking, oh, are they adapting the Tales series into an MMORPG. That's interesting. Because it definitely has that kind of anime look to it. And I think, yeah, look out Genshin Impact, because it seems like they're gunning for them.
Yeah, and they're supported by Amazon Games, who are initially apparently was not planned for Blue Protocol to come to the West. Even it was just scheduled for Japan. But with the support of Amazon Games, they're going to make it happen in 2023. And it's going to be free to play. So this generally makes me skeptical. It's going to be free to play. You don't have to pay anything to play through the entire game. But of course, there will be things like cosmetics and additional characters and stuff like that that you will then be able to pay for. This will be microtransactions, of course. I don't like that in general. But I must say, Genshin Impact. I played that game for a bit. Not much, but for a sufficient amount to have a rough estimation of its quality. And while I like everything on the surface of Genshin Impact, it kind of feels too derivative for me. It feels like clobbered together from different parts, and I never could get quite into it. It's a little bit, it doesn't quite hit the mark for me as someone who has a profound affection for JRPGs. And I do hope that Blue Protocol might be able to fill that gap.
I'm optimistic because Bandai Namco with the Tales series is really compelling JRPG storytelling. So I think that, what was the Scarlet Nexus too? Scarlet Nexus came out a couple years ago now. They have a firm handle on it and a good history with it. So if it is the case that it is totally free to play and there are no paywalls or anything like that, and that it's just cosmetics and it's just maybe additional items or something like that that you can pay for, I will be definitely giving it a try. But if there's a invisible paywall or a wait time or something like that, I will not proceed with it.
Yeah, that's exactly the thing. We can try it out together when it comes out.
Yeah.
And
we can
jump into it. It's free. There's no problem. There's no effort. But the thing is, if it turns out that it's something like, hey, you can craft this item, but you'll have to wait 4 real-time hours, or you can give us money directly, then I'll immediately, where's account delete button, you know?
Yes, yeah, eject.
It's, to be fair, though, I understand. It's an MMO. It's going to be a long-running thing. That's at least what they're aiming for. So, of course, they need to finance it. And then you've got really two options. If you don't want to make it an upfront payment, you need to make it either a subscription, which scares off quite some people. Most people are like, nah, you know, a little bit hesitant about that, especially in times of the success of Genshin Impact. Or you make it a thing where you sell season passes, microtransactions, cosmetics, those kinds of things. And I do hope that they are successful if the game in itself is of sufficient quality.
Pretty exciting. Well, speaking of JRPGs.
Another one.
And yes, JRPGs and translation and Japanese people.
But people might actually think that we've got a little bit of a Japanese bias here on the show.
What would give that away, though?
I wonder.
But long-awaited, more information on Final Fantasy 16. So fan favorite person, Yoshi P, was out to announce the new trailer for Final Fantasy 16, which was heavily gameplay. It was all gameplay, really. The couple of smatterings of cutscenes here and there. And it looks really fun. It looks like they're taking all of the open world action RPG elements of Final Fantasy 15 and Kingdom Hearts 3 and putting a really impactful world and story on top of it. It seems from the trailer that it's going to be kind of a revenge story, which is always a solid place to start. And I'm really excited for it. I was kind of lukewarm on 16. I knew I was going to play it, but I didn't have any strong feelings about it. This trailer made me really excited for it.
Yeah, I agree. I also mostly had the impression that Final Fantasy 16 is going to be just flickering colors with gigantic monsters somewhere flying through the sky.
Yeah, it definitely gave that impression.
Yeah, this trailer, like almost like a kaiju thing with, you know, Godzilla and, you know, huge monsters, which I guess is part of Final Fantasy and the summons and stuff. But this trailer went a little bit more into some character development, and you could ascertain how the actual regular combat would look and feel. And that also brought me a little bit closer to the game, warmed me up a little bit, and gave me the feeling, okay, they're on a good trajectory here.
Yes, I'm very excited for it. And it's always fun to see Yoshi out in front of people. And I think that he's an endlessly charming person who really, I think, got his fame with all the work that he's done on Final Fantasy XIV. And I think it's smart that Square Enix has a kind of a face of their games now. And Yoshi P is a good face to have.
Final Fantasy XIV actually also won quite some awards. Best ongoing game, I can see here.
Yeah.
Best community support. Yeah, those two. Best ongoing game and best community support, Final Fantasy XIV.
Very indicative of that game. It's I could speak as one, someone who's played it quite a bit. I love the Final Fantasy XIV community. Comparing it to World of Warcraft, for example, Final Fantasy XIV is a really lovely, fun, excited community all the time. And so well-deserved awards, and really looking forward to 16.
Well, while Final Fantasy 16 did have some gameplay to show, I think my biggest lowlight, and I say this every year, is that there's still not enough gameplay for me in the showcase. I think that the Game Awards are cool and fun and entertaining, but after an hour, I feel saturated with these bombastic render trailers where I know that at best they convey like a sense of what the theme is of the game and what the aesthetics roughly are, but it doesn't really tell me much about how the game is actually going to feel to play, how the game is actually going to look like. So what I would wish for the Game Awards to consider is to maybe tone down its marketing a little bit and maybe say, if you submit a trailer for the Game Awards, then please include at least 1 minute of uninterrupted gameplay or something like that. I know that's a big ask. I know that some people would be like, oh, but that will, you know, like all everything will feel slow and dragged out. But on the other hand, it is the Game Awards and it is about celebrating games and not cinematic trailers. So I would prefer to have more gameplay on the show.
There are certain moments where Jeff Keighley, when he's introducing a game, he'll talk about his experience playing it. And I think there were two moments. The one that I remember, though, is with Judas, the new Ken Levine title. Jeff Keighley was like, I played it for hours. All of that is in the game. Like, it's all in-engine. You know, none of that was fabricated for the trailer. So it's always funny when Keighley himself is like, this is all gameplay, folks.
Because he knows what people want to see and want to hear. Because it's like, yeah, a render trailer is really nice, but I think for an award show that's centrally focused on games, there's just too much cutscene and render trailer material.
It does make you appreciate the games that do show the gameplay. Is it Earthblade from the people who made Celeste? That yes. Game looks really fun. A really fun little 16-bit adventure.
It does look really fun. I fear, though, that it might not achieve the same success that Celeste achieved. I saw that the studio changed its name as well, if I recall correctly. Like, originally it was called Matt Makes Games, and now they have like a couple of initials that are not quite as memorable, I must say. who knows, maybe I'm completely wrong, but it felt to me a little bit like it is Celeste, but a little bit different.
Yeah.
And I'm also really curious, because we don't have that on our list, about Hades 2.
I was just going to say Hades 2.
Because Hades 2, amazing, cool. The announcement was really well done. It was like, I don't know who we play as, but it's a female character this time around.
Yeah. I saw something saying that it does seem to be somebody actually from Greek myth, like some random daughter of Hades and Persephone, but who knows? I don't think they gave the name yet.
It looks super beautiful, super interesting. It's essentially going to be Hades, though. I'm not quite sure that this is the concern that I have. Does this actually substantially or sufficiently distinguish itself from Hades to be warranted to be called Hades 2? Because from the first glimpses that we've seen, it feels more like a Hades DLC.
It looks a lot like Hades, the gameplay that we saw. Like the animated cinematic was beautiful and really cool, and the gameplay that they showed may as well have been a level in Hades. So yeah, I'm with you there. I'm a little hesitant.
Yeah, I have no doubt that it's going to be a fantastic game. I have absolute faith in, I think it's Supergiant Games, and Hades is amazing, so why change a working formula? However, of course, when you call it Hades 2, then you need to be aware that people will come to it expecting that it differentiates itself to some substantial degree from the first one.
Well, as a wise man once said, no game, no hype. Them's is the rules.
Yes. So,
more game, please. Yep. Well, I have... This is a low light for me. I actually waffled on this being a highlight because there's parts of it that I like, but ultimately the announcement bummed me out. So my close personal friend, Crash Bandicoot, made an appearance on the stage. And it was the return of that giant mascot costume that was in the marketing material from the late 90s and early 2000s, which is always fun to see. And there was a guy in there, he was acting out as Crash, and he wanted to get he wanted to get the other characters from the series on a Zoom call, but it failed. They were all muted. That was pretty funny. I just wish that the announcement had been for something I care about, which it's not. This game that's coming out is Crash Team Rumble, which is, from what it looks like, sort of a Mario Party, team party game kind of thing. And my only experience with that is the old game Crash Bash, which is terrible. And I'm very hesitant because that game left a terrible taste in my mouth. Even as a kid, before I had standards, I knew something was wrong with that game. So I wish it had been another Crash title, because that would have been really cool to see. I'm glad Crash is still around and in the zeitgeist, but I'm just disappointed with what kind of game it is.
Well, here's my last highlight. It also pertains to not a specific video game, but something that happened on stage. And that will be the musical performances.
Excellent.
As every year, I am excited whenever I see that there's, another musical piece coming on. Of course, there's the Game Awards Orchestra. They are wonderful. It's absolutely a delight to watch, especially their medley, when at the very end of the show, they play a medley of all the nominees for Game of the Year. It's always gorgeous.
And it's so exciting with all the footage behind them. And you can tell that everybody in the orchestra is excited to be there and just loving their instrument. I think probably my favorite part of the show is that medley at the end.
Yeah, they really hype it up. It's really something. I think Joseph Farah, he even explicitly commented on it because he won with It Takes Two, the Game Awards, the Game of the Year last year. And he deliberately commented how he had goosebumps when the Game Awards Orchestra played his music.
Or as he put it, he had hair all over his body.
Yeah. he's just hilarious. Whenever he's on stage, you never know what's going to happen. It's always hilarious.
Got to have him, though.
Also, there was a performance of the song Blood Upon the Snow, which is a song from God of War Ragnarok that was beautiful. There was a piece called Lilith, performed by Halsey, which was part of the Diablo 4 trailer. And because all of that is so delightful and exciting, I was super happy that Jeff Keighley announced at the very end of the show that there's going to be a Game Awards musical performance at the Hollywood Bowl on 25th of June next year. I'm really looking forward to that. I love these orchestral video game concerts. They are amazing.
Me too, and I love all the spectacle that goes into them. Those two performances that you mentioned, the Hozier God of War performance and then the Halsey Diablo performance, the stagecraft that went into those with the extras dressed in the costumes from the game and these incredible sets that they had made with the gameplay footage in the background. Shout out to the guy playing the hurdy-gurdy. behind Hozier. I'm so excited for that concert too, because I'm expecting that it'll be pieces like that, like curated events, and I think that that's going to be really cool.
That is also the very reason, by the way, why I have such a fond memory of that particular, E3, when E3 was still a thing.
Oh, yeah.
And a PlayStation did this showcase where they showed like three or four games or something, and they accompanied everything with one orchestra. Ah, that was beautiful.
This is going to be pretentious of me, but I'm going to bring the film student out for a minute. It reminds me of how in old cinema, they would, there wasn't a way to connect music to film back when cinema was new. So when you would go to see a film like The Cabinet of Dr. Caligari, for example, there would be an orchestra playing and scoring it live and seeing the imagery behind the orchestra, it gives me that feeling of true artistic performance that we're seeing here.
Well, it could be an orchestra, or actually, I think what was probably even more common, in especially in the smaller cinemas, there would be just like a piano player. Who'd be, yeah, and there's, yeah, like, you know, Charlie Chaplin movie, and he's like,
That's a great job to have. I score film music live.
Well, those were our impressions of the Game Awards 2022. Thank you so very much for listening. If you want to let us know what your personal high and low lights of the showcase were, then please head over to studyingpixels.com/contact, where you can reach out to us. You know that you can support our show by going to studyingpixels.com/plus. And of course, you also know that we've got a brand new Discord server, which we're trying to breathe life into at the moment. So if you want to drop by and have a chat with us, then please feel free to do so. On studyingpixels.com, there's like a Discord icon directly on the home, on the website. By clicking that, you will be immediately thrown to the server.
I should say, if you are interested and you do go to the Discord server, you can participate in watching live, like Richard and I did with the Game Awards. So we didn't announce it really ahead of time, but we're planning to do more things like that so that we can watch things together on Discord.
Yeah, social viewing. Kind of cool, especially such things like Game Awards where 60% of it is some kind of advertisement, where you have sufficient time in between to just chat and comment on it.
That's right.
Well, thank you so very much again, and we'll talk again next week.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.